Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling.
Hey there. We at Blue Wire wanted to thank you for your continued support of this podcast. With over 90 podcasts across our network, we are committed to bringing you great content to fill that sports-shaped hole in your heart. To find more Blue Wire pods, search for us on iTunes or check out bluewirepods.com. And remember, one day sports will return and it will be glorious. Thanks for listening. On to the show.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another week of the Corner Podcast. Kel Dansby here with the old man, Andreas Hale. It is nice to start off the week talking some combat sports, MMA and boxing on today's show. And of course, a little bit of extra stuff peppered in the beginning of the show to get the vibes right. It was a good weekend. I feel like it's going to be a busier weekend because we have live MMA. The UFC is back, so we have plenty to talk about there. But I want to start this show out with, I don't want to say the highlight of the weekend, but it's something very anticipated, and that is the Jill Scott-Erica Badu battle. Dre, I feel like people are hyped for this. I saw your post, not only on Twitter, which usually, you know, takes off, but on Facebook. And I feel like Facebook is the core audience for this. This ain't a Twitter-type battle. Like, we're not promoting on there. I feel like Facebook, people are like, yo, we got to get together for this. I feel like the neo-soul, the community is gathered on Facebook. And I feel like there's a buzz right there.
Yeah, I mean, look, man, when I saw it, I was like, this is dope. And I'm excited. Is it Saturday or is it on Sunday?
I thought it was the 9th.
That's the night of the fight, so I'm not going to be able to watch this live. So I'm kind of pissed about this. Yeah, because it'll be UFC 249 time. But this is a battle. Like, it's dope. And immediately people were like, who's going to watch who and this, that, and the third. And talking to Fonte from Little Brother. And I actually talked to Questlove too, which is funny because
you bringing Quest now, yo. Your name drops on this show are incredible.
Crack the claw to that one. but Fonte was like, because he was like, "Who you think will win?" I was like, "Yo, it's going. I think Erica Badu could wash her." Oh, Tay comes up with this theory though that Jill Scott has cornered the Tom Joyner Morning Crew set. And it is like the music is specifically for that crowd, whereas Erica Badu started off with Baduism and my favorite album for her, Mama's Gun, and then she started to drift into this hip-hop realm with the New America albums. Worldwide Underground was kind of weird for a lot of people, And his theory was, like, if she don't play her cards right and does some weird shit, like, Jill could run her off the damn thing. If they treat this like a real battle. If not, it'll be just like Babyface Teddy Riley just playing shit. But he's right. I started really thinking about Badu's catalog. And if you're a Neo Soul person, it's like Badu's first album and parts of Mama's Gun, but then it got really, like, overly hip-hop for a lot of people. And they might not fuck with that version of Badu. Like, the New America albums are dope as hell to me, but I can see a lot of people, like when Jill plays Golden or Getting in the Way, it could be a rap for a lot of people because the aunties are going to go nuts over that shit. But I'm looking forward to it.
The aunties are like 35 years old right now. Let's be clear. I checked your whole Facebook mentions. Everyone's like 35 to 40.
Yeah, I mean, that's the...
Are we auntie age? Auntie and uncle age now, I guess? I mean, all my friends are having kids.
Probably say so. I mean, you look at the audience now, and it's like, Baduism came out in 97, I want to say, or 96. And it was funny, because I didn't... When that album first came out, and I was in high school, I didn't get it. Like, I was like, oh, this is cool. As I got older, I was like, oh, yeah, I like this shit. And then it was like, I mean, I love to see D'Angelo about it, but that whole genre, and like Jill Scott didn't get on until
2000, really, yeah, 99. 2000. Who is Jill Scott? Like,
yeah, because she was on the 2000? She was on the original version of You Got Me, and then Erykah Badu was on the other version. And
I was about to say which they will both probably play.
Yeah, and I mean, look, man, if it turns into a singing contest, Jill's just gonna run her out of here. But Badu's got some joints, and I'm just kind of looking, and I'm like, man. This was like the advent of the neo-soul era, and this was the time where, like, Love Jones and all that shit was popping, and this, yeah, I guess it's the, I mean, I guess I'm an uncle, the kids are over here right now, and they don't give a shit. Like, I talk about this, they're just like, what? They're like, who's Jill Scott? I'm like, is that Trippy Red? I was like, get the fuck out of here.
I'm going to sit the girls down so they can listen to it, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
My daughter doesn't know shit about shit. Like, she doesn't know who's Erykah Badu or who Jill Scott is. I just had to play her some stuff on our road trip to New York. And she's just now deciphering the New Jack Swing era. Oh, so this is, like, perfect time. Like, we're at, like, 95 right now. Hmm. So I got to usher them into this era. But Neo Soul is such a... acquired taste,
which is weird because it's not. I think what happens is for a lot of people is, and it's a maturity thing more than an age thing. At a certain point in my life, and it happened really early, I just got tired of people yelling at me all the time. So I was just like, all right, cool, I'm gonna listen to some soul music. And that's why I've always liked older, like Curtis Mayfield, Stevie Wonder, and all that stuff. Like, other when you're young and you go out and party, you don't want to hear none of that shit. Like, you're not interested in neo soul when you're at the club and you're like 21. Like, that's not part of your life. So, yeah, it's I don't know. Like, I know I appreciated it growing up, but I don't know, like, the new crowd. Like, it's gonna be an interesting crowd. The fact that Teddy Riley and Babyface had like 500,000 people watch the travesty of a sound session, it says a lot. So,
yeah.
I'm looking forward to it, man. I mean, it sucks. I'm not going to get to watch it live because I'll be watching people get punched in the face, but it is what it is.
Erykah Badu might be doing too much because, you know, she does the concerts anyway. Yeah. So she might try to play everything live and acoustic. In which then, if Jill's sound system is worth anything and you going live and acoustic and actually getting on the vocals, yeah, Jill might wash her.
Yeah, again. Because
Jill's the better singer.
Yeah, if Jill decides to start doing acapella stuff, and then because the thing about Jill Scott, if anybody's ever seen Jill Scott live, it ain't the same. Like, it's not what sounds, it sounds just like it is on the album, but it's even better because Jill is like really singing. She's a singer, which I had to realize after seeing her live several times. Like, yo, she can sing. Badu, I don't know if she's gonna come out and start burning incense and smacking tuning forks together and shit. Like, I don't know what Badu's about to do. She might have turntables, which would be dope, but. You know, you got to play to your crowd. And I'm curious who's going to be, like, who's what. Like, for me, personally, I like Jill Scott, but I've never loved the Jill Scott album. I like songs, but I've never loved the Jill Scott album. Baduism and Mama's Gun, I love those albums. I never loved the Jill Scott album. I liked them a lot. Never loved them.
That's so tough because who is Jill Scott? Like, I could just zone out to that. I love her voice.
Oh, it's beautiful.
So I could listen to the whole album and just zone out. Like, her voice, and that goes into a whole different wave. I just think Jill is sexy.
We battling off sexiness. We battling
off
music.
It doesn't matter. That adds it to me. I've always thought Jill was sexy. Talked to my pops the other day, and when this was announced, he was like, yo, Jill was always his like dream chops. And my pops is like 160 pounds. You guys just tune into a podcast. Any woman above like 170, he calls chops because he's a small, tiny dude. But that's my weight class. Like, two bills and up is my weight class. So Jill was just like, mwah, the chef's kiss to me. This is before the video went viral of her with the microphone.
Oh, God.
So, yeah. I mean, Jill is just, she just, and Erica does too. Erica has a different type of sexuality. Like, her aura is different. It's still very sexy. It's just different. But Jill is just, God, I just want to cuddle her. Like, that's it. Like, I just need getting close. Like, Jill, I feel like we need my boy AJ Springer, our boy from our group chat, AJ in on this conversation, because he will feel me on this. Jill's just that size where you just want to pick her up just to show her you can. She's so sexy. Yeah, so this boy. Whole time, like, if she's singing a cappella and all, bro, I'm just being there just looking at her sexiness.
Dog, you are objectifying women, man.
I am not. It's a great way to. I'm not like, it's not negative. She's just so sexy. We touched on the voice already. We touched on the skill set, the album. I love. You know, I can't leave out the sexiness. She knows she's sexy. It's not like she don't know. She knows she's sexy. She knows she was doing on that microphone. So I don't know. I'm ready for this battle. Marcus Vandenberg, you know, friend of the podcast in the group chat, Reverse Rat Pack, said she was going to get washed. Catalog speaking, let's just go off a catalog. No theatrics, no nothing. Song-wise, if you include features, which I'm sure we will.
They have to.
Because Erica has incredible features. When you look at that, I think 20 songs, I think Jill more than holds her own. Like, I just threw on Lupe Daydream the other day. That shit's bonkers.
It's, dog, it's tough for me because, again, like, Jill's got to be very careful with the selections. Like, there's Golden, there's Getting in the Way. You talk about songs like Daydreaming. There's songs, but, yo, like, Jill has joints, but then, like, Erica has joints. Like, On and On and Lifetime alone are joints. Then you talk about, like, Liberation with Outkast. Or then you go to Mama's Ground with Booty and Bag Lady and Green Eyes. And then you go to the Worldwide Underground album with You and then Window Seat. Like, I feel like Erica has a bigger, more robust body of work, but she has to play her cards right. I can't think of 20 Jill Scott songs off the rip. I can think of,
A Long Walk is the shit,
though. Yeah, but it thins out at a certain, for me, in my opinion, it starts to thin out. I think Erica's just got back. She just got to play her cards right. She just can't get all weird and shit.
She needs the features. Like, I'm a huge Big Crit fan. Her on Higher Calling a Big Crit, fire. So when you throw in some of the stuff, He Loves Me is dope. She could pull out, I'm looking at it, 12, 15. And then surprise me with 5.
I mean, she's going to surprise me because Erica's just got the body of work. She's got a lot.
But what are you pulling out with Erica? You name, like, oh, you're going through the one album, two albums that you love. But three albums deep and it starts
Window
to, like,
seat?
You playing Window album seat? Cuts?
Duh, you could definitely play album cuts, but you can go deep. Like I said, you can play deep cuts. Worldwide Underground has a joint You, which is like 9 minutes long. Again, Outkast, Liberation. Like, that is a classic. And everybody forgets it's in Badu's catalog because she's on that joint off of the damn Aquemini album. Like,
yeah,
dog, there is so much Erykah Badu.
She's not even listed on that track.
Nah.
she was like, yo, let me just come through and body this.
Dog, she is like, Erykah's just got a tremendous body of work. And it's just, I don't see Jill with the same amount of joints. I just don't. Like, oh man, Gone Baby don't like belong. Like, man, listen.
Yeah, Erica hits on a different level for you because some of those they're good, but it's like,
oh, Honey, you forgot the joint Honey with the video with the record covers, and she recreates all the record covers. Now, I mean, she got, again, she's got like joints with Mad Libs, like she's got joints with like
Mama's hip-hop. Gun is your number one joint. I'm looking through the track list. Dog,
I love Mama's Gun. I absolutely like. There is Bag Lady, of course. There's Green Eyes. There's My Life. There's Didn't You Know, which Dilla produced. Like, again, she got Dilla joints. There's Booty. There's Orange Moon. That, I mean, she's got Clever. Oh man, like Erica's got joints.
You're the first person I know that likes that over Baduism.
I love Baduism, but Mama's Gun, when I heard Mama's Gun, again, this was her transition for me. Not even a transition, where she was like really moving into this hip-hop realm, and she wasn't necessarily moving away from neo-soul, but the fact she had Dilla and the Soulquarians produced this album, like, that's a hip-hop head's dream. So it's really going to depend on playing to your audience, because on and on, Erica is a neo-soul artist. As she progressed in her career, the music started to transition more and more hip-hop. So it'll be interesting to see. But I just think Erica's got a lot of variety. And again, I love Jill. I just can't name 20 bangers from her.
She gonna have to surprise. But I mean, it's the RZA case, right? Like, she gotta come through and be like, yo, she did that? Like, wow. So I have faith in Jill, though. And, you know, not just because she's sexy. I got faith in the catalog. We gonna see what she pulls out.
I mean, what happens when Erica plays Tyrone? Or
I mean, Tyrone is the tops of the tops for Erica, right? Like, you gotta hit her with the Jill Scott single back. Like, that's where Jill has to play the single. Like, she really has to hit her with A Long Walk or He Loves Me after that.
It's a lot.
But Jill Scott got Golden, which is fire.
Golden is fire.
So, I mean,
I just think the way
there's album cuts on that first album. The Way is dope.
The Way is dope. But you're thinning out. We talking about what we talking about? The first album? Now let's talk about some more albums. I'm saying. I mean, Erica's got an answer for everything. And like,
the second album's all right. It, again, how are you treating this battle? I feel like Babyface on Teddy Riley came through to slap him up the second time. Teddy play something, Babyface was like, I got something better. Bam.
Well, I mean,
but
come on.
Primo and RZA wasn't going after each other like that.
No, that's what I'm saying. If this just turns into these two playing jams, I'm just going to enjoy it. But if it's like a battle, it'll be interesting. Because like Babyface was like, oh, you do remixes? Like he was.
Yeah,
yo,
he was.
Yo, he was Shady
Face. Petty
in
that shit.
Yeah, Shady Face came out to play. Like that Babyface version of Babyface was here to like Teddy Riley was trying to prove something where Babyface was just like, oh, that's cute. Well, I'm gonna play this song that I created for white people. Like, it's like it was so many joints that Babyface had, and you were just like, wow. And then every time Teddy tried to hype it up, Babyface was like, nah, bro, we're just gonna cool it down, light another candle, get another glass of wine. And he played Tevin Campbell or something. It was like, damn, like Babyface didn't give Teddy Riley really a shot, even though Teddy's got jams, but Babyface just owned that lane. I don't know
how even giving him credit on shit, he crushed him, yo. Like, he was like, oh, I remember you did that. That was dope. But I did this with that person, and you just, bow.
Yeah, like, he was like, oh, I remember that. Like, he was so cool. Like, I remember that, Teddy. Yeah. Oh, you did remixes? Well, here's the original. And, you know, he would go like, Boys the Man, like, End of the World. I was like, what are you, like, oh, my God. He's just bodying them. So I don't think these two are going to shade. Well, you know what? If you remember, it felt like Jill Scott was throwing shots at, I think, the Chappelle Block Party. And I don't think it was, like, real shots. I just think it was, like, nudges because everybody put those two, like, next to each other. So maybe there is going to be a little competitive aspect here. I mean,
I love that. I love that movie.
Oh, I love it, too. I love it, too.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I mean, they can really go. This is one of those, if they want to go friendly, they can really go into unique places with it. Like, where they can, like, duet shit at the same time. Or, you know, Jill can remix and flip an Erica song, and Erica can flip a Jill song. And, like, give their own unique version. Like, they're two of those people where their catalog is close enough, and their vibes are close enough, where they can really do some dope shit. That, you reminded me of that with the Block Party.
Yeah.
Like, where, yeah, you can sing something dope. Like, Erykah Badu can come out and sing Daydreaming in her own tone. Yeah, and just blow people's fucking minds.
Yeah, that wouldn't be fair. But she could.
Like, you can do that with these two if you wanted to get real funky. So it's, man, so many different ways to go. That's going to be exciting. That's this weekend. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk combat sports and what's happening this weekend. UFC 249 is coming up, so plenty to talk about. We're running through predictions for the whole card. Stay right there. We'll be right back after the break. All right, everyone. We'll get back to the show in a second. But just to let you know, with no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner, BetOnline, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on. From their online casino to poker and blackjack, they're bringing Vegas to you. Missing the NFL? No problem. BetOnline has live daily Madden NFL 20 simulations that you can bet on.
You can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. All open 24 hours a day and all online. Use promo code BLUEWIRE to join today and receive your new welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online wagering solution.
All right, people, just that quick. We are right back. Time to jump into the MMA. If you guys have been living under a rock, Dana White has been trying everything in his power to come back and bring the UFC back. The first live sport is what he wanted to do in the United States. And it looks like he gets his wish. UFC 249 this upcoming weekend in Jacksonville, Florida, because Florida opened up the floodgates and you can do whatever the hell you want down there. Florida man is now Florida State and not my favorite college. It's just running wild. People are fucking walking pet alligators. You can do whatever you want down there. So Dana White's like, you know what? That's the place I want to be. UFC 249, which is supposed to be 250, is just a combined card of everything that's pretty much been canceled, trying to get the best card out there. Yes, it is pay-per-view. So if you got the scratch ESPN pay-per-view, if you guys want to drop 80 on that, I will not, due to my obligations and the people who pay me, tell you to bootleg this fight. So, but there's, you know, go watch it. If you guys want to scratch your itch of combat sports, we're here to talk about the overall landscape of this card. And Dre, I want to start off with Florida itself. We've seen this on social media. We've seen a lot of this. We saw a picture of this in New York over the weekend. A lot of these states opening up. People are flooding to get back out there. There's people all along the beach. Some mass, some not mass. I saw the Grim Reaper on the beach.
Right.
Shit is getting crazy. People are not waiting. It's hot outside. They want to get outside. They want to do hood rat shit with their friends. I saw your gif yesterday of when people flock out and coronavirus, you know, spikes. That shit had me dying. What is your thoughts of now the UFC going to Florida, and then Florida in itself, just fuck it. Like, yo, we're open for business. Let's get it. Oh, cracking the claw for this one. Now, man, we're getting spicy.
Look, man, this, I don't understand. Like, there was a report once Georgia opened their doors to businesses that there was 1,000 new cases immediately. And states that are doing this and, like, opening their business, and, like, you look at Huntington Beach and all those idiots down there. Look, man. I like outside just like you two, like everybody else. But I ain't willing to die over that shit. So, and the crazy thing is, for a lot of people, it's not real. And for me, it's like, the interesting thing is it starts hitting closer and closer to home. I found out one of my friends in New York, she had been battling for the past 2.5 weeks. I didn't even know. And my cousin, his best friend from high school just died of coronavirus, and his sister's father died of coronavirus. This is just in New York. Like, New York is never going to be the same again. It's going to be a long time.
I just drove through New York. Like, me and the kids, but we kind of, like, bubbled. Like, we never left the whip. But we drove through New York. And we had, like, the sanitizer and the Lysol spray. But we drove down all the way through the city, down the west side, up the east side. Took me 40 minutes.
It's crazy.
To get from the crib in the Bronx all the way through, all the way back up. Because just the story is I had to check on my grandmother. Like, my grandmother's in New York in the apartment. She's by herself, so I got to check on her every weekend. So me and the kids went down there. We quarantined for like 10 days here in the crib. And then now we feel good enough to go and check on her to not get her sick. So I was bringing her groceries, all this stuff. We're like, yo, we're just going to drive down and through the entire city. Empty. I mean, drove down through Times Square, drove down Broadway, you know, the West Side, Central Park, all this shit. Empty. The middle of Central Park, packed. The hippies are out. Not many people who look like you and I.
Stupid.
But everything else, dead ass empty. It's crazy.
Yeah, so, I mean, at this point, if the UFC is going to hold events in Florida, and again, if y'all want to go fight, cool. Like, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to be entertained from a distance. Like, people keep asking me. I did a bunch of shows this week on UFC 249. They asked me if I was going, and I was like, no. And they was like, would you go? And I was like, no. You don't care? No, I don't give a shit. It ain't that serious to me. Like, I have a family to come home to. I ain't running that risk with all them people there that I don't know. That's how the virus spread in the first place. It's not like everybody's coming from the same place. Everybody's coming from different places across the United States to come and fight. And then after they lay on each other for five rounds or three rounds or whatever it is, then you get your cut man sick, and then you take your plane and you fly back. Then you give it to your family or you quarantine. I don't know what they're doing. But I'm good, man. Straight up, like, I want no part of this. So if they want to enjoy it, fine. Me, it's like, dog, stay home. Because if we get a spike, y'all are really not going to get to go outside. So I don't know. That's crazy, man. I just stay away from the whole situation. I don't understand why people can't stay inside. Ain't that serious?
It's really not. Like, I feel, I don't, I wouldn't go to a fight. Like, I don't have to be around people to cover this. That's the one thing we do. Like, we can cover this from home. There's been plenty of journalists who've been banned for years.
Yeah.
Still covering this. We'd be all right. Like, we can do the same. So I don't gotta be there to cover these sports. A little more so with social media and me doing social media and stuff now when boxing opens up and everything. But you know what? If it means 200,000 less views in a night, it's all good. Because like you said, I have the kids here. I have all this here. It's a different world. So you can't risk it. And we're not at the point yet where we're trying to risk it.
Mm-mm. Not at all.
It's just not. It's not worth it. The juice is not worth the squeeze to go there. But there's a handful of fighters that are going there and are risking it. So we have to talk about them and the actual card of UFC 249. They tried to stack the card. I'd say it's a really good card top to bottom.
It is.
Maybe it's not as top heavy as we've seen lately. But I like it. I like the card. The early prelims. Smiling Sam Alvey is on there. Sam will fight every other day if you let him.
Yeah, just won't
so
win.
That should be all right. Vicente Luque is on there versus Nico Price is going to be one hell of a fight. Those are early prelims. Uriah Hall's on this. Cerrone's on a free card. He was just headlining a pay-per-view against McGregor, 2 months ago? So there's plenty of star power. We'll start at the prelims on ESPN, just give our predictions throughout the card. Let's start with Uriah Hall versus Jacare.
Yes, sir.
It's the opening matchup. I mean, that's nuts. Like, really. Like, this shit headlines a lot of UFC on ESPN cards. So, Uriah Hall versus Jacare. Jacare is going to wrap his ass up in a pretzel. Because I don't believe Uriah Hall is anywhere near being the guy he should be still. He's not going to fool me 8 times Like, you're not pulling the trigger. That one spinning back kick was fucking dope. But at this point, it was lucky. It was lucky not because you landed. Lucky because he threw it. So I don't believe in your eye haul. I think Jacare wins. Jacare. They're not even the same class.
Yeah. Well, one thing, first of all, like, I've done a few interviews. People are like, is this the most stacked card in UFC history? I was like, did you see UFC 200? The answer is no. Like,
a lot of people fell out. I mean, at the top, shit fell out of that.
It don't even matter. Because you go, you had Amanda Nunes versus Miesha Tate. You had Daniel Cormier versus Anderson Silva. You had Brock Lesnar versus, like, I mean, you had, this, that card was loaded from top to bottom. Even without John Jones versus DC, you had Cain Velasquez versus Travis Brown open the pay-per-view. That card was loaded. That card was stacked. This card is solid, but it's not. I mean, there's no bigger card. I mean, how can this be the most stacked card in UFC history and it doesn't have Khabib, Conor, or John Jones on it? Like, how? It's not the most stacked. Yeah. It's a good card.
No. Again, because the top isn't stacked. The mid, the bottom to mid is stacked. The top just don't got that oomph to finish it off.
I'm just saying, it's a good card. Like, this is a really good card, but you have an interim title fight headlining. Like I'm going to go back to 200. Just real quick. Nunes versus Tate, Lesnar versus Hunt, Cormier versus Silva, Aldo versus Edgar, Velasquez versus Travis Brown. That was your main card. Your prelims was Juliana Pena versus Kat Zingano, Kelvin Gastelum versus Johnny Hendricks, TJ Dillashaw versus Rafael Sunchow, Sage Northcutt versus Enrique Martin. Then you had Joe Lozon, Diego Sanchez, Gegard Mousasi was on the fight pass prelims against Thiago Santos, and then Jim Miller versus the Fireball Kid, Takanori Gomi. That is one of the most stacked cards in UFC history. This doesn't equate
to that.
That's
crazy.
This is a really good card. It's not the most stacked. Like, they're trying it. And I get it for marketing purposes. Fantastic. Not the most stacked card. Anyway, Uriah Hall versus Jacare. Look, I can't be fooled with Uriah Hall anymore. I think it works with certain fighters. It doesn't work with Jacare. And Jacare is older now. So, you know, if it was another opponent, I'd be like, oh, probably. But
yeah, like, maybe you can catch him.
Yeah, the reality is that even though Jacare has lost a few fights, he loses against top guys. If you look at Uriah Hall, his last two wins were against Antonio Carlos Jr. and Bevin Lewis. Who? Christoph Jocko was another win. Okay. He lost to Paulo Costa, Gegard Mousasi, Derek Brunson, and Robert Whittaker. Lost to all those guys. His biggest win in his career was when he stopped Gegard Mousasi. And then Gegard came out there and just stopped him in the first round. Pissed off Gegard. Uriah's not that good. And it's okay to say it. Like, dude, that Ultimate Fighter finale, or that Ultimate Fighter season, because he lost the finale against Gastelum, that season was 7 years ago. That guy's never showing up. The guy that you think is going to show up, he ain't never showing up. So, yeah, I think Jacare either stops him, because Uriah Hall is very susceptible to getting knocked out, or he chokes him out. One of those two things is going to happen, unless Uriah Hall just channels, like, he goes Super Saiyan on Jacare, and we, like, there's some shit we've never seen before. But, picking, yeah, this is Jacare, man. It's just Jacare.
Yeah, it's just Jacare's not championship caliber right now, but he's not Uriah Hall floor either.
No.
He just has too many weapons. So, I think both Jacare there. And to be said, I like this card for a lot of the underdogs. Are you doing your betting show again?
I did it. Man, I recorded 2.5 hours of betting shows today.
Okay, I was about to say, you got to bring it back, right?
Yeah, man. I was tired. I was just like, again? All right, another one? Like, everybody was so excited about this stuff coming, and I'm not done. I got more this week. But yeah, I've been doing betting shows already.
Yeah, I feel like this is a good one for the underdogs the entire night. Next fight, Cookie Monster, Carla Esparza versus Michelle Waterson. I actually like this matchup and pairing them. I just think Esparza, you know, what, the first champion in that division in the UFC, but that was her peak. So I'm going to take Waterson to win. If there was an antamweight division, Waterson would be king, but she's fighting, or queen, excuse me, but she's fighting up in weight. So I think she's still a top five fighter in that division, and she proves it.
Absolutely not. Waterson's not a top five strawweight. Waterson is, dog, she's not. Come on, man. She's not. Carla Esparza is going to put her on her back and grind her out for three rounds. It's really simple. Waterson doesn't have the power to keep Esparza off of her. And this, Carla Esparza, the Cookie Monster, is one of the most disrespected women in the UFC, period. She was a champion. She lost to Joanna. Okay, that's fair. Because Joanna's a beast with the hands. But other than that, Carla Esparza just beats up on people. And she just puts it. It's not fun to watch. But she beat Rose Namajunas. Like, she's only lost to Tatiana Suarez, Claudia Gadelha, Joanna and Jacek in the UFC. And then the only one that was that sucked was when she lost to Randa Markos. Other than that, she's beating people. She beat Cynthia Calvillo. Like, she's going to put Waterson...
She did beat Calvillo, which is a good win.
Yeah, and Waterson, as good as she is not... she's not great off of her back. She's a good grappler, but she's going to get neutralized by Esparza's wrestling. And she's not, like, the striker that's going to really keep her off of her. So I think Esparza is going to... It might get dicey, like, in the first or second round, the longer it stands up. But I think Esparza is going to work her over and just put her on her back.
That's old school Esparza. Like,
I mean, that's the only Esparza we know. She don't fight no other way.
That's it. No, I think you put... I think people could put hands on her, and I give Michelle Waterson... She's not in the class of those women you mentioned that beat Cookie Monster, but she's not far down from that. The only thing that keeps her far down from that is the weight class.
She's too small, man. She's too small. She's always been too small.
But I think she'll still be just right to get this win against Cookie Monster. Cookie Monster is one-dimensional. Like, she ain't throwing hands. So, next fight, heavyweight matchup, Oleinik versus Werdum. I like this matchup a lot. Werdum, I don't know, ever since he did the corny, cheesy face, he ain't been the same. So I'm going to go with Oleinik by TKO. Somebody's getting washed. So I'm going to say Olenek's winning this by TKO.
Absolutely not. This is another one. No, I don't see that at all. Oleinik is a trash striker. And Werdum is actually a pretty good striker. Oleinik has the Ezekiel choke. Werdum is like a fifth degree jiu-jitsu.
That's it? One move that's like arguably the most, you know, difficult move to pull off?
You're not going to pull that off against a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt like Werdum. It's not going to happen. Because Verdum's not going to be stupid enough to allow that fight to go to the mat and get caught up in that position. Verdum's going to punch him up. There's two things that's going to happen. It's either going to be really quick and devastating knockout, or this fight is going to be absolute trash. Because Oleinik's not a good striker. They're both 42 years old. They're old as shit. They've been through the ringer. But Oleinik doesn't, man, he doesn't crack. So, I mean, this should be easy work for Verdum if he stands there and strikes with him.
I picked TKO because Werdum is going to stand there and strike with him. But I mean, maybe he could go to the ground after Werdum gets cracked, and then Oleinik wraps his ass up.
Dude, who is Oleinik? So maybe who is Oleinik knocked out?
I will tell you right now.
Jared Rosholt.
Okay.
That's it.
Is that it?
In recent memory, yeah. I mean, you have to go back to like 2013. But Jared Rosholt in the UFC in 2014. Since then, all of his victories have been by submission. You know who's not getting submitted? Fabrizio.
But he's not like he's necessarily wrestling them to the ground.
But dog, he's not submitting Fabrizio Werdum. It's not happening. He doesn't strike that well. Werdum clearly is a much better striker now. Clearly.
I will tell you this. Let's see. Oleinik. I mean, Maurice Green, submission. Yeah, he loses a lot by KO.
That's all, dog.
But Rosholt is probably the last one he KO'd, submission. A lot of these guys, yeah, Ezekiel choke, real naked choke. He puts them down with the punch, though.
The jiu-jitsu is trash. Like, Werdum is a decorated jiu-jitsu practitioner. He ain't falling for no goddamn Ezekiel choke. Unless he gets rocked, and I don't see that happening.
Let's see what Werdum has done lately. Now you got me interested. Volkov lost by KO. Miocic KO'd him. Yeah, all right.
I mean, look who he's lost to top-tier guys.
Man. Lost to Reem. Reem looked good in his last fight, though, so I can't even hold that again. Reem is a weird-ass dude, where Reem will look good for 2 seconds, and then Walt Harris, he beat the big ticket, huh?
Yeah, he submitted him in like a minute.
By submission.
That's what I'm saying. It was quick, but the point
Tybura.
Is...
All right, I'll flippy-floppy this.
Yeah.
I'll give it to you. You talked me into it. Werdum for the win. Even though I like Oleinik, I'm going to feel shitty when Oleinik wins, but I'll flippy-flop to Werdum on that one. Main card, headliner, Cerrone versus Pettis. Again, Cerrone's just coming off of a pay-per-view. Did crazy numbers. It was Connor. I don't like his statements that said he wasn't up for the fight.
Yeah.
That bothers me a lot. It's the biggest fight of his career.
Yeah, he just wasn't there.
But that can't be excuse for that fight.
No, it can't.
But it could be your excuse for a lot of other fights. For that fight, no. No, it can't. He arguably waited 4 years for this shit since he was talking trash and we saw him in Vegas, right? You're too small for this division. You're too small for this weight class. And Conor went up another division and said, I'm still not too small. I'm going to wreck you in 40 seconds. That's one of those I'm here for the paycheck type. And shit, Stephen A. Smith got crushed for that. But lo and behold, looks like he might not have been far off.
Yeah.
Because the man didn't want to fight. You know what? Cerrone should beat Pettis, but I don't like those comments. Fuck it, I'm going with Anthony Pettis.
Yeah, I'm picking
Pettis. Cerrone should choke his ass out, but no. I'm going with Pettis.
Look, Pettis, both these guys, this is a legacy fight. These are two guys that won't be in title contention anymore. They've had their run. We've pretty much seen the best of them. But this is a welterweight fight, where Cerrone's actually kind of small. And Pettis is not too far removed from knocking out Wonderboy, which still shows flashes of brilliance here and there. And if everybody recalls, Pettis kicked Cerrone's liver into the third row in that first fight. Quick. Finished Cerrone real quick.
Oh, yeah.
I think the same thing's going to happen. Look, I think Cerrone saying that he wasn't there for Conor, but I think the fact of the matter is he's been in too many wars, and it's catching up to him. And he can't do what he used to do anymore. So right now he's saying in his head in that interview with Akimoto, he said, my mind wasn't there for the fight, but your body wasn't there. And your body's not going to be there for this fight either. And I'm picking Pettis to stop him. I think it's like the end of the road for Cowboy.
There's no end of the road for Cowboy because Dana will keep cutting him a check. So, I mean, unless this is the end of the road for winning.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I hate that statement. That was a marquee fight. That was Red Panty Night.
Yeah.
And you treated it like it was nothing? Nah, like, I don't like that mindset. So, yeah, I'm going with Pettis in that one. Main card time, we have Greg Hardy versus Yoran De Castro. It's a showcase fight for Greg Hardy. Give me, you know, if I'm betting, I'm taking De Castro because Hardy's hit or miss. But I'm not betting, so give me Greg Hardy by a knockout. First round.
Yeah, even if I'm
this like the consensus?
Dude, the reality is it's Greg Hardy versus cardio.
That's what it is. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
An inhaler or something like that. Like the thing I'm most concerned about is Greg Hardy's conditioning. And everybody remembers like he used an inhaler in his last fight. This is not the time to be needed to use an inhaler. Like to have respiratory issues in a coronavirus pandemic and you're still out here fighting. The UFC served this guy up a tee fight. They teed this shit up for him. Greg Hardy's probably going to decimate this man in a matter of minutes, if seconds. So, yeah, Greg Hardy by knockout. Like, De Castro, come on, man. You weren't brought here to win. That's for goddamn sure.
Nah, not at all. By no means. Showcase fight. Jeremy Stephens, Calvin Kattar. Give me Jeremy Stephens. You mentioned some, you know, I think it was Esparza and who she lost to and her record. And, you know, she's only lost to, like, some of the top fighters. I would say Jeremy Stephens in that same realm. They've done no... And maybe Jeremy Stephens wants this, but he's gone through the gauntlet in his weight classes. Yo, Cub Swanson... I'm going through his couple fights. Cub Swanson, Charles Oliveira, both losses. Beat Dennis Bermudez. Lost to Max Holloway. Beat Henan Barao. Lost to Edgar. Lost to Moicano. Beat Melendez, beat the Korean Superboy or whatever. Josh Emmett beat him, lost to Aldo, lost his beat. No contest with Yair, lost to Yair. That's 10 legit fights. I'd argue he's had the hardest road his last 10 fights of anyone in the UFC. There's not one gimme in his last 10 fights.
So you're picking him?
No, I say he's going to lose to Calvin Kattar.
He's going to lose. I mean...
But Kattar lost his beat
Everybody loses.
Cool. No. Yeah. Everyone loses. Lost to Moicano. Cool. That. But beat Yamas. His resume is not that of Jeremy Stephens. It's not. His best win is Andre Feely.
True, but here's the problem with Jeremy Stephens. Like, a lot of those fights that you mentioned, he lost them all. Like,
he lost a lot of those.
He lost
but
them.
But he lost 7 out of 10.
Yes.
But it's fucking tough. That's a tough road.
Yeah, I mean, dude, he's the perennial gatekeeper. Like, that's where if you beat Jeremy Stephens, it's like, all right, cool, we can start talking about, like, top 10, top 5. That's what you have to do when you beat Jeremy Stephens. Calvin Kattar is, like, a guy who boxes extremely well, controls distance well, has great octagon control, and puts punches together well. I'm not saying Stephens can't win because he's still got dynamite in both of his hands and his knees, but I think Calvin, if he just controls the distance, it can outpoint him. Because the problem with Jerry Stephens has always been his cardio. He loses a little bit of steam, and he needs you to come at him, and I don't think Calvin's going to make that mistake. So I don't think Calvin Kattar's going to just use his range, his distance, use his strong boxing ability, and win a decision.
I don't want to agree with you this whole time. I'm taking Jeremy Stephens then. Fuck it. I'm on the other way. I listed his whole list of achievements to say that he's had a tough 10 fights. I'm going with him.
All right, good luck.
Little heathen. next fight, Ngannou versus Rozenstruik. Ngannou's taking his fucking face off. I mean, Rozenstruik should have lost to Reem the last fight. Caught him with, what, 5 seconds left?
Yeah,
no, Ngannou's washing him.
Yeah,
and it's only 3 rounds, and Ngannou's not gassing. He's taking his face off.
My only concern is Rozenstruik is actually a very decorated kickboxer. And if
good luck.
If Rozenstruik tried to keep his distance, because I can't get the damn fight with Derek Lewis out of my head with Ngannou and how trash that fight was. Like, we were so excited for that fight, and it was garbage. Yeah. And I just really hope that Ngannou's gotten past that, like, scared to pull the trigger shit, and then goes out there and just comes after Rozenstruik. I'm not sure.
You know who's a decorated kickboxer? Overeem.
Yeah.
Ask him how that went.
But, I mean, shit, Overeem ate them both. Like, Rozenstruik knocked him out and Ngannou knocked him out. It's a matter of, is Rozenstruik going to engage and leave himself? Because that's what Overeem did. The shit got good to him. He's throwing the jab. He left one out there a little bit too long and never saw his fist again. The next thing he knew, he was dead. So
it took 24 minutes and 55 seconds.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying with Rozenstruik, that was a kickboxing match he was losing over him, where Ngannou, technique-wise, he's like Mike Tyson, very crude with his striking, but if he hits you, he's going to kill you. That being said, I think it's a matter of time in 15 minutes that he's going to catch Rozenstruik and put him to sleep. I don't know if Rozenstruik can put Ngannou to sleep, because you're going to have to put yourself into danger to do that, and that's not a risk that a lot of people should be willing to take. More power to Rozenstruik if he does so, but there's a high possibility if he steps in that punching zone, he's going to get knocked out, and I'm picking Ngannou.
You know why it's so easy for me? Because Rozenstruik is not going to take him down.
No.
So you're going to strike with him for 15 minutes. You're going to get your face put in the front row, I would say on someone's lap, but there's no fans. So you're going to have your face put in the empty seats where fans should be. So that's what I'm taking Francis Ngannou for. Co-main. And 5 rounds. Now we're going to 5-rounders. Cejudo versus Dominic Cruz. Cruz fighting for the first time. I had this the other day, but fuck it. I'm just saying 3.5 years.
Yep.
Give me Dominic Cruz. One, I don't believe Cejudo beat Mighty Mouse. Cruz clearly is as herky-jerky and weird and crazy as Mighty Mouse was. I think unless Cejudo could really ground Cruz and wrestle him, in which I love Cruz's sprawl and his wrestling evasion, just kind of defense, so I don't see him getting him in a good enough angle to take him down. I'm going to say Dominic Cruz wins this fight by decision 4-1.
Yeah.
I like Dominic Cruz that much better than I like Henry Cejudo. Cejudo's right place, right time, right decision against Mighty Mouse. He shouldn't have won that fight. He caught someone being juiced up and drained going down. And then he had one hell of a performance against, you know, when he won the bantamweight title. But even, what was that, against Moraes? A hell of a performance. But even then, I don't believe him like I should. That's one good performance in his last 4 or 5 fights. I think he won a split decision before then. Give me Dominic Cruz. I don't care about ring rust. I don't care about the layoff.
I agree with you. And I talked about this heavily on the show that I did today, because they talked about how great Cejudo was. And I was like, is he really? I was like, let's really like break this down with Henry Cejudo. Dillashaw was drained, like you mentioned. A lot of us didn't think he'd beat Demetrius Johnson. The Marlon Moraes fight, if everybody remembers, he was getting washed before he came back. And Moraes gassed.
Yeah, Moraes is simply, for a round and a half, right? He was getting washed. I forgot about that.
And then he Moraes gassed and Cejudo caught him. Cejudo's not an excellent striker. That's point one. Point two is Dominic Cruz's footwork. Listen, the only thing that's going to beat Dominic Cruz in this fight is Father Time. That's the only way I see Cejudo beating him, if Cruz just can't move like he used to. Because if Cejudo can't get his hands around him, I think Cruz dances around him and just pieces him up. The other thing is, with Dominic Cruz, he's lost two fights in his MMA career. Uriah Faber early in his career and Cody Garbrandt. The thing about the Cody Garbrandt thing is something that we've mentioned before and that you were very vocal about. Team Alpha Male spent like a decade trying to figure out how to beat Dominic Cruz. Like, they wait like Dillashaw, Garbrandt, Faber, Benavidez. They all had all this time to prepare for Dominic Cruz. Henry Cejudo has had one camp in quarantine to prepare for Dominic Cruz.
He's had 4 weeks. A key point, he wasn't preparing for Cruz. He was preparing for Aldo.
Yeah, so
he's had 4 weeks. No way.
With this quarantine and the fact that I don't know who you're going to get as a training partner to emulate that. Who are you going to get to emulate Cruz's style? I don't see it. And people are like, yo, listen, Cruz has spent his whole career injured. Like, he just kind of disappears and comes back 2 years later and then just wins the title back. He's done it multiple times. And Cejudo, man, I'm sorry, guys. He's not that good. He's not that good. Like, he just
is. And maybe at 125, he is, because he's a little stronger. At 135? No.
That's the other issue. Because who was the last person to beat Demetrius Johnson before Henry Cejudo? Dominic Cruz. And you know what Dominic Cruz did him? He muscled his ass around the ring. Cruz is taller, longer, faster, with great takedown defense, and an excellent scramble. We talk about Cejudo's wrestling, but the thing that we don't talk about is his inability to keep people down. Cejudo's got terrible top game. It's awful for MMA.
Yeah, he doesn't try anything when he's down there. We saw that with Mighty Mouse being able to pop back up. He was never worried about submissions or getting stopped when taken down. And then you look at Dominic Cruz, you mentioned all his attributes. He is smarter than every other fighter.
And then
every single one in that division.
Do you not think that Dominic Cruz has been sitting there doing commentary, looking at Henry Cejudo and was like, I'm going to fuck him up. Like, you know he has. Like, Dominic Cruz is extra cerebral. And the only reason why he lost to Cody Garbrandt is because Cody Garbrandt was a younger version who had spent years preparing for that fight. Years. Yeah. And had an amateur boxing pedigree that was beyond what most people have when they face Dominic Cruz. So who does none of that shit? If he can't get his hands on Cruz, it's going to be a long night. Cruz by decision and new, once again, bantamweight champion of the world. It's going to fuck everybody up. Bye-bye, Triple C. It's a wrap.
Yeah. Dunzo for him. You might as well go back down and try to get the belt back down there. Like, I don't see it happening. And I don't know, man. Cody Garbrandt, like you said, had the perfect storm. I could say it could be a wash by Cruz on Cejudo. I don't think he stops him. But you look at that first Mighty Mouse fight and how that went. Cejudo was just lost out there.
Yeah,
and Cruz as a striker is more dynamic than Mighty Mouse. Mighty Mouse is more well-rounded. Cruz as a striker is more dynamic.
It's just, dude, it's really a matter of time. Because if it's Father Time, because Cruz is 35, he's been out for 3 years, he hasn't won in 4, that could be an issue. Because we really don't know what we're going to get out of Cruz. But if Cruz is any remnant of who he was, Cejudo's just, I don't know how he's going to get his hands around him. Because the thing that Dominic Cruz does better than a lot of people, which... Yeah, we always talk about the footwork, but you never see Dominic Cruz's back against a cage. It doesn't happen.
No, it's too fast.
Yeah.
It's too quick. Like, it could go the opposite way, too. We talk about Father Time, but DC, you know, was a champion at 40.
Yeah.
He can arguably be a champion again at 41. You look at Cruz and you say, how much time have you had in the octagon? And he's had, like, 4 fights in 8 years. So since 27 through 35, he's had 4 fights. He could just be fresh as hell.
He could be.
And go on a 3-year run like he's 28 still.
I'm banking on it. I'm picking Dominick Cruz. People think I'm crazy. Too. I'm like, this is not that difficult for me.
It makes too much sense. So, yeah, I mean, you know, unless it's one of those cases where you got to beat the champ to be the champ, and the refs, or excuse me, the judges don't see it that way, I just don't see it going that way. I see Cruz making this fairly easy to judge and winning the title. So after that, then we have main event, Ferguson versus Gaethje. I think we agree on this one, too. Tony Ferguson is an amazing fighter, hasn't lost in God knows how long. What, 10 fights, 11 fights?
12.
12 at this point. Jeez Louise. A couple injuries, weird circumstances, including the coronavirus, haven't allowed him to face Khabib for the title. This is another interim title fight. And I like, you know, Tony's ground game. If Khabib did take him down and he could wrap him up and maybe have a chance, I still don't think he beats Khabib if they fight. But against Justin Gaethje, I think Gaethje's a problem for anyone in that top five. And he's going in there to kill or be killed. And I think he kills. I think he knocks out Tony Ferguson.
Yeah. So I was doing some research. And this is MMA math. This is just the way it is. Tony Ferguson has won 12 in a row, right? Yep. And we're going to go through a few of these names real quick. So after he lost to Michael Johnson in 2012, which is almost exactly 5 years, I mean, 8 years ago, he beat Mike Griot, big deal. He beat Katsunori Kakuno, so what? He beat Danny Castillo in a fight that I watched recently. He didn't win. I thought Danny Castillo won that fight. Okay, fine.
Split decision.
Whatever. He beat Abel Trujillo. So, Gleison Tibau. All right, whatever. Josh Thompson, over the hill. Now, this is where the streak happens, where people really started focusing. The Edson Barbosa fight. It was the night before the McGregor Mendez fight, I think?
Aldo.
Okay.
Yep.
And we were all in the media room watching this fight. And these two were a bloody mess. And Ferguson wrapped up Barbosa and choked him out. And people were like, oh shit, he's for real. Because that's when everybody started noticing the winning streak. Then he fought Lando Venata. And Lando Venata put hands on him in the first round. Where
Late replacement, right?
Yes.
Like just throwing in there.
He put hands on Tony Ferguson. Ferguson still won, but it was a late replacement. Put hands on him. Now here's where it gets interesting. Rafael Dos Anjos, who was a shell of who he was, he had won one fight before he fought Tony Ferguson. Kevin Lee was young but wasn't ready for an interim title fight and then had possibly staph infection heading into that fight.
He did have staph infection. We all saw it.
I'm just saying, but it's something that we saw, and it was just like, okay, it kind of takes away from that win. Anthony Pettis was not rolling when he fought Tony Ferguson. Anthony Pettis was a shell of his former self. Same with Donald Cerrone. So what is Tony Ferguson's biggest win?
Dos Anjos.
And again, you go back to the Dos Anjos fight, and you look at it, and you're like, well, that wasn't the Dos Anjos.
He hasn't been the same, yeah.
He lost to Tony Ferguson after he got knocked out for the title by Eddie Alvarez. This is not a Tony
Ferguson. Connor would have washed his ass.
This is not a Tony Ferguson who is beating up guys at their peak. He's beating guys who have either just come off a loss or have just won one fight. Aside from Kevin Lee, everybody that Tony Ferguson has beat has been on the wrong side of a loss or just won a single fight. This is crazy to me because it's almost a benefit of circumstance is why he's won 12 fights in a row. Whereas Justin Gaethje, listen, Justin Gaethje hasn't been here as long, but he's already fought Dustin Poirier, Eddie Alvarez, Michael Johnson, Donald Cerrone, Edson Barbosa, and James Vick. If you really want to slice this up, you can argue that Justin Gaethje might have a better resume than Tony Ferguson, despite losing to former champions, champion Eddie Alvarez, and Dustin Poirier, who fought Khabib. Now, that being said, I also was watching Tony Ferguson fights. Yo, he gets hit a lot.
A ton.
Like, he's not this guy who...
Submission skills help.
No, his submission skills are fantastic.
And saves him a lot.
He's also a cardio machine, which is why I really hate that this fight is happening on this coronavirus camp, is because Ferguson is used to training by himself. So he'll be ready. I don't know where Justin Gaethje is going to be at cardio-wise, but the issue is this. Ferguson gets touched a lot in his fights. Pettis touched him. Everybody touches Tony Ferguson. None of them have the power of Justin Gaethje. None of them.
Yeah.
The other issue is, when Ferguson usually wins, he gets to fight to the canvas. Justin Gaethje is a phenomenal wrestler. He just doesn't use it. He has great takedown defense. He just doesn't use it. So what I'm seeing here is the worst thing that could happen to Tony Ferguson is a Justin Gaethje who realized that you can't go balls to the wall in every fight, and he learned his lesson against Eddie Alvarez and Dustin Poirier in two fights where he was winning a back-and-forth battle and then got stopped. Yep. Now he's
had them both rocked.
Yeah, now he's measured, and that makes him even scarier than before because now he's picking his spots. Now he knows, like, oh, you know what? If I'm calm, these shots are going to come. And somebody like Tony Ferguson who's going to throw that funky shit at you, I'll wait for it, and I'll check you out, and I'm going to put you to sleep. I think Justin Gaethje stops Tony Ferguson and fucks up the whole Khabib Ferguson bag. This is a bad fight for Tony Ferguson.
I agree, man. I definitely agree. Looking back, Cerrone, the doctor stoppage, like, he was piecing up Cerrone, but Cerrone's not what he was. I remember that Kevin Lee fight. I'll watch it again this week.
Watch
that
it.
Kevin Lee fight. I think Kevin Lee won the first two rounds, went for the takedown, and ended up in a choke.
Watch the fight again. Kevin Lee was piecing up Tony Ferguson.
Right? And then ended up shooting for a takedown, left his neck out there, and got fucking choked out.
The credit that I'll give Tony Ferguson, which is why, not that he's, because he's the favorite, right? But I was like, put your underdog money on Gaethje by knockout, because there's no other way Gaethje wins unless it's by knockout. If it goes five rounds, Ferguson's winning. But right. The only thing I have to question is, how good is Tony Ferguson's chin? Because he's been durable as hell. So if he can take the punishment, he makes this a very chippy fight. But man, Justin Gaethje, I keep saying this.
Different level of, you mentioned it. Who, we'll go down the list. Cerrone catches you, tries to choke you out. Cool. He knocks you out, he's patient. Or, you know, he rocks you, he's patient. Pettis, overly patient at times, right?
Yeah.
Kevin Lee, still coming into his own as a striker. And he wasn't 100%. Dos Anjos isn't a great level striker. He caught some people, but he was never a great level striker. Venata caught him. He got saved by the bell. Venata couldn't catch him again. Barbosa, patient level striker. No one on this list puts pressure on you like Justin Gaethje. When Gaethje rocks him, that pressure is not going to stop. Gaethje will wave at him, tell him to get back on his feet, put his hands in his arms, get chest to chest, and said, let's thump. It's going to be a whole different world.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, and I think he fucks up the bag. And if Ferguson wins, then cool. Now you earned it.
Yeah. I just think, like, I love the record. I love the 12-fight winning streak. Because, look, man, you can only fight who's in front of you. And Ferguson has fought everybody they put in front of him and won. But, man, this is when you run to a buzzsaw. And that 12-fight winning streak ain't like a John Jones winning streak where John Jones was just beating on champions and dominating them. Ferguson gets touched. And I will argue this until Gaethje proves me wrong. He's one of the most, well, he's the most dangerous fighter in the lightweight division. And that includes Khabib Nurmagomedov. Because Khabib's going to smother you and then beat you down. Gaethje can hit you with one shot and the fight's over. And the other thing people forget about is those brutal leg kicks that Gaethje throws. I don't know if he'll use them against Ferguson because Ferguson's a little taller and longer. But those leg kicks, there are so many ways that Gaethje can break you down standing up. He's a terrible matchup for everybody. But you have to get him out of his game. You have to get him to go to war and force him to make a mistake. If you don't, and he sits there and picks you apart, look, man, the last three fights didn't go out the first round for Justin Gaethje. And he just picked the spots. Ferguson's going to have to play this smart. If he tries that cute shit and tries to throw a spinning elbow like he's been talking about, you're going to get fucked up.
Yeah, but listen, I'm counting on it. So, no, that's the fights for this weekend. Let's take a quick break. Shout out to Blue Chew, the sponsor. When we come back, we're just going to touch on boxing real quick to wrap up the show. Thank you guys for staying with us. Be right back. All right, we'll jump right back into the show. But first, guys, are you looking to last longer and go a few extra rounds? Get to BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com has the first ever chewable that brings your performance in the bedroom to another level. They got the same active ingredients that are in Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. And since they're chewable, they'll work faster.
You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. Plus, you don't need to go to the doctor's office to spend time waiting in the pharmacy line. Blue Chew's online physician is free of cost, and once approved, your order ships straight to your door in discreet packaging. Here's a great deal for you guys. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order free when you use promo code BLUEWIRE. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BLUEChew.com, promo code BLUEWIRE.
All right, we are here to wrap up the show. A little bit of boxing talk. Had a ton of MMA talk, so that was great. Touch on boxing before we bounce straight. Not too much going on. Still no live fights. We cracked my truly. I'm breaking away from the claw for this last one. Cracked this open. Just a couple of things that we've been seeing around the timeline that we have to talk about in boxing. The first one, which was a good question on Twitter, and I think Leonard Ellerby posed a question in which, now that boxing is planning this eventual comeback, and it looks like we'll be back in June or July, how will this play out without fans? And will officiating get better now that no fans are in attendance? Because officiating has been a problem. We've seen Triple G. We've seen him versus Canelo, in which you just went back and you told us, I think last episode, where you went back and you scored the fights again, no sound, no nothing, and Triple G won both. Do you think this benefits fighters because it gives a clear indication of who wins and judges can't be swayed?
It's going to be interesting, man, because just like in MMA, because you don't have the benefit of judges in MMA right now, I mean, the judges, crowds. Crowds are the ones who dictate when the referee stands up to fight. It's not the referee. For the most part, when the crowd starts booing, the referee gets restless and the referee decides to stand them up or to release their clinch along the fence. Now there's no crowd, so you have to figure it out. In boxing, because it's just two guys standing and punching with each other, the challenge becomes, are you judging the crowd or are you judging the punches landed? And if you can't hear shit, what are you judging? So I think we're going to learn a lot about judging. I think we're going to see some crazy scorecards with no fans. I think, like, we're going to see a few Adelaide Bird cards where you're like, what the fuck were you watching? It's going to happen. I don't know if we get to learn who really won. I have no idea because I don't know how many judges are doing this without fans to begin with. They're so used to having fans there that now that they're doing it without fans, and now it's a whole new world. Now you're just kind of judging off your vantage point. Like, I was watching the Canelo Triple G fights, and again, I picked Triple G to win both those fights, 115, 113. And what I noticed is that they were still very close rounds, right? Extremely close rounds. Where in the first fight, Canelo would get off to this fast start, and Triple G would be consistent, methodical, shoot the jab, and put on pressure. Second fight, Canelo met him in the middle of the ring, but he was gassing out in that fight as well. If you're a judge, it's just really a matter of what you favor. If you look at a fight and say, man, he started fast, I remember that. Or if you remember who closes quick. So in boxing, I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how judges score fights. And I think we're going to get some stupid scorecards, and people are going to bitch and complain, and nothing's really going to change. Officiating is always going to suck because it's going to be hard for judges to really decide on who wins rounds because they are really that close in real time.
No, Adelaide Bird aside, I feel like this is a benefit for, you know, a lot because we've been at those Canelo fights, right? We've been at the Mayweather fights. There's Pacquiao fights a lot as well. Like, every time they throw, the crowd oohs and ahs. Not lands, every time they throw. And just being human, you are swayed by that. And there's fights where I look and I'm like, yo, that round's so close. I'm going to give it to this guy. And maybe the crowd does have an effect on that. So looking at it now, it's like they have nothing else to focus on. Now it becomes, as a fighter, what does this mean for you? Are you hyper-paranoid now to say, like, I have to be more crisp or technical because I just can't live off of the big punches? You can't give away rounds like Deontay Wilder. If it's close, then maybe you're a little paranoid on how that goes. As a fighter, a lot of fighters feed off of the crowd. You don't have that anymore. It's a glorified sparring session. So now it becomes, dare I say, like more like Olympic boxing. Will we see more guys outpoint people? Instead of going for the highlight KO, it's going to be weird. Teofimo Lopez is on record saying he doesn't want to fight without fans in the crowd. He didn't stipulate how many fans. And maybe we get to the point in September, October, November where it could be like the Nicaragua fights that we saw 2 weekends ago where it was 10% capacity. I think everyone had to have 8 chairs in between them. And that's some fans. And maybe that's what he's waiting for. But I don't know. I don't know how it affects boxers and being hype and rallying. Because it affects so many other sports. I'm not sure if that's a thing in boxing. Is momentum a thing? Like crowd carried momentum?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I know it is in basketball and football and hockey. I can't pinpoint how it is in boxing.
Guys feed off of energy, man. And if there's no energy, it's hard to feed off of something. So I think, absolutely, like, it's hard for guys to get up for fights without the crowd. Like, some people love that energy. But I've talked to a lot of other fighters where they completely block out crowds. So it's really a matter of, you know, what you prefer. And for a lot of people, like, you talk about Olympic boxing, but remember, like, the Olympics is still in front of tons of fans. This is not. This will be nobody. You know, nobody there. So, except your corner. And I think that's the other interesting thing. For a lot of fighters, MMA and boxing, you know what I can hear now when I'm fighting? I can hear your corner. I can hear exactly what they're telling you. Two, throw the one. Shoot for the takedown.
Yeah.
I hear all that shit.
Yeah.
I hear everything
but, I mean, your corner's telling. How much do you listen? Like, when I played high school, college football, I was so zoned in. Only thing I could hear is my defensive coordinator. And no crowd, no nothing else. Like, I would add tunnel vision and, weirdly enough, tunnel hearing. Like, I never heard the opposing team's calls or play calls or even offensively. I was looking at formations or defense. I was looking at the offensive formations, but I wasn't paying attention to the quarterback's audibles or their calls and trying to pick up keys. I was zoned in. So I'm not sure how much these guys even hear that. Might actually have to have a fighter on or something. But how much do you even hear that? Because in sparring, people yell all the time. Does that matter?
I mean, some people do. Like, some people are very... I've talked to a lot of fighters who are very acute. They can hear what's going on. They sense a lot of things. Whereas other fighters are just completely zoned in. The only person they can hear sometimes is a trainer's voice. But it really depends, man. This is a different world now. This is going to be very different. So I don't know how it'll play out. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested to see how it all goes. Another thing that came up in the boxing world that I figured I'd ask you about, no one closer than you to this situation, DAZN and Matchroom and their plans going forward. Eddie Hearn came out and said, personally, him, it's not like, yo, this is going to happen, this isn't a plan, it's nothing, but he would like to see Canelo just take on Triple G. When stuff gets ramping up, wants boxing to come out with a bang. You think this is the matchup? The Billy Joe Saunders talk and all this stuff, which I guess was never officially finalized, would just go by the wayside, and it'd be Canelo Triple G. In your opinion, is this the best return fight for Canelo?
Yeah. Well, okay.
It doesn't add anything to him, though, right? Like, he could only lose something. He's not gaining a belt at 168 like he would against Callum Smith or Billy Joe Saunders. He's not fighting someone at 160 where he could gain a belt. He can only lose something.
So it's tricky because after Gennady Golovkin fought Sergey Derevchenko and got hurt to the body and people were like, oh, Gennady's washed, there was a little bit less interest in a Canelo Triple G 3. But I've said this before. I don't know if it's true or not. It's just how I feel. I just truly don't believe that Golovkin was up for that fight. And I think he'd be incredibly up for a Canelo fight. And it's the fight that people still want to see. Canelo has been to the Mayweather school of thought, where he's very careful in how he picks his opponents. So for him, the best fight is probably not a Golovkin fight. But the weirdest thing happened recently when Jonathan Banks, Triple G's new trainer, did an interview and said, we don't want the Canelo, well, not we. He doesn't want the Canelo fight immediately. He wants two fights before Golovkin can fight Canelo. And for me, I'm like, you're out of your fucking mind.
That's a long time.
Golovkin's 38.
You talk about father time, yeah.
Golovkin's 38, man. Two fights, and barring, like, he just is coming off of a calf injury, is the reason why he couldn't announce his next fight. You got to do this fight with Canelo now. Because it's just, like, maybe you take a tuna fight if you, like, you really have to. But, dog.
Two fights is May, so it's not crazy.
But two fights is crazy because you don't know with Triple G. Like, because that you have to be in sync with Canelo. Keith Thurman said an interesting thing on the Achim Brock show that we have over at DAZN. Keith Thurman said, this is the first time where everybody will be on the same level playing field when boxing starts again. Everybody will be in a place where they haven't fought for multiple months. Because schedules are usually off in boxing. Like, some guy fights in January, a guy fights in March, then they fight in July. One guy has had a shorter training camp, one guy hasn't. Now everybody's on the same clock. So, if Canelo and Triple G are in a fight, like, what's the use in the tune-up? You just fight each other. What do you need a tune-up for? You both have been on the bench. So fight each other. So I think that's what should happen. And I think there's no, like, if you believe that Triple G is washed up, if you're Canelo, you take advantage of it and you knock him out. If you really believe that. And if you're the Triple G side and you have concerns about Triple G aging, you take the Canelo fight now. What the fuck is the worst that can happen? There's really nothing left for Golovkin to do but fight Canelo.
That's it. And prove that the first two fights were flukes.
That's it.
And that he actually won. So go out there and go out on your shield. It's... like we talked about with Gaethje, it's kill or be killed.
Simple.
Go out there and you got to get the knockout. Because you know what the end result is if you don't.
You can call it night, buddy. It's a wrap.
So either you're going to get knocked out or you're going to knock him out. But either way, it'll be entertaining and that will add to your legacy. If he gets knocked out, so what? Then this trilogy goes down as one of the best trilogies of, you know, the current century.
That's it.
And if you knock him out, then... You're in territory. One, you're going to run it back. And that's going to make you a lot of money when you could have fans. So, like, there's nothing but benefits for Triple G. There's no reason to take tune-up fights. Because worst comes to worst, you lose. But you lost the other two, so who cares?
Yeah, get your money, buddy.
And that's it. So you keep moving. Last topic, in the same regards, but someone I would say to step aside and not take the immediate fight is Deontay Wilder. And... there's rumblings of Fury and Joshua's camps talking. And I think, I forgot, MTK might be a middleman or something. Because I don't think Aram and Eddie Hearn really get along that well. But whatever. They're making a fight right now. Joshua, sooner or later, they're making a fight. Joshua's going to fight one of Aram's fighters. So I think, personally, going down this road, it would be smart. And talks are about having the fight in the Middle East to kind of offset this cost, is to have Deontay Wilder step aside. He just had shoulder surgery. Let him heal. Let him have a tune-up fight. And it doesn't have to be a cupcake fight. But there's other people. Dillian White's out there. There's other people who would be willing to fight Deontay Wilder to see what he has. Let him have one of those fights and let Tyson Fury kind of fight Anthony Joshua and unify this title, make an undisputed heavyweight champion. And as long as Deontay Wilder's of the impression of I have the next fight after that, I don't see how it's a loss at all for him. And he gets paid to step aside. Take 10, 15 mil to step aside and rehab. Easy money. And then still on top of that, go and have a fight with a Dillian White to kill time. And then next summer, hopefully, if coronavirus is handled and we got a better idea of things, then you have fans there for either a Fury trilogy or a Joshua fight. I don't understand what's so difficult stepping aside. To me, it's just pride at this point.
That's exactly what it is. And that's why Deontay's not going to step aside.
It's ridiculous. You're fucking up money for pride.
Yeah, but that's what he's going to do. I mean, fact of the matter is that there's a rematch clause. It's a big fight. And Deontay Wilder wants revenge. And... he thinks he can beat Tyson Fury because he's basically put every excuse in the world in his pocket and brought him out. So the last thing he wants to happen is Anthony Joshua step in there and then they go on to have a series of fights that are huge. And Deontay's put on the back burner. Also, I remember Deontay's not very young. He's older. But I think that because of the bicep surgery, because of the way you got mollywopped your last fight, sit your ass down, take a tune-up fight, yep, and then go after whoever wins the fight. Because what'll happen is that whoever Deontay fights, it's going to be a huge fight because it'll be for the undisputed heavyweight title.
Yep.
That, like, Fury versus Joshua is a massive, massive fight. There will be one champion. And that's what Deontay Wilder said all the time. One champion.
One champion.
So, yeah, it won't be you, but there'll be one champion. So let the...
But then you get to go and beat someone and become the one champion.
Yeah, but it's just, man, it's just Deontay's pride. Like, Deontay's pride is the only thing that's going to get in the way of this fight happening. He doesn't really like Anthony Joshua. He wants to prove that he didn't lose to Tyson Fury, and he doesn't want to be forgotten. And that's, it's hard for a guy who has that much on the line in Deontay Wilder to say, here, take this money and step aside. Because the other side is, I mean, listen, Kubrat Pulev doesn't want to step aside either. But I think you could pay him enough money to be like, you know what? All right, cool.
Oh, definitely.
So
I think you could pay him. Wilder has to realize, though, like, yo, going back and coming off surgery, no tune-up, and getting washed again might be curtains for you.
Yeah, but his ego says he can win. So it's like, to him, there's no losing this the rematch. It's not. I think JD's, his trainer, needs to tell him, like, dog, you're coming off of bicep surgery. Sit down. Let's figure this out. Because we can't fight like we fought last time. But again, that's the problem. Deontay Wilder doesn't believe that was him in the last fight. It was the suit. Mm-hmm. It was not there. All these other issues. When you have those built-in excuses, you think you're going to win the next fight. When you
then fight Pulev. Wasn't he supposed to fight Pulev anyway before Pulev popped?
No. That was Povetkin.
Pavetkin. Yeah. Excuse me. I mean, I'll put that on Pulev.
I mean, personally,
Pavetkin.
I would like to see... But
fight Pulev then. And then you just killing time together.
There's like all these guys at heavyweight, right? Because you mentioned Dillian White. There's Derek Chisora. There's Oleksandr Usyk, who's still lingering out there too. But Dillian White is a WBC number one guy. And
who's the young kid, real quick, before we go on? Who's the young kid you guys have?
Who, Michael Hunter?
No, it's, shit. It's like two D's in his name. I'll figure
it
out.
Oh, Dubois?
Dubois. Yeah.
Like, all these guys are there.
I like that kid, too. Like, it's time. He's one fight away from really testing himself.
Yeah, there are a lot of heavyweights that can make some noise. And if you're Deontay Wilder, you kind of look at it like somebody like Dillian White. Yeah, you should probably put hands on him. He's the number one contender of the WBC, and he's willing to fight you now. So take the money, because it'll be a lot. Because if the rumors are true and Saudi Arabia is out here just throwing bags around, for you to step aside is probably going to be just as high as the payday for the fight.
Word.
Step aside. Chill out. You'll get your shot.
And nothing's bigger for rehabilitation, even going out there, unless you think you can just wax Fury, which maybe he does. But nothing's bigger for the rehabilitation of your image and making more money in that Fury fight than getting another highlight KO.
Yeah.
Dillian White lost and got knocked out in highlight fashion by Joshua. Fight him.
Dude.
Like, he's been knocked, just top what Joshua did.
The bigger issue, actually the biggest issue, is not really going to be Deontay Wilder. It's going to be Al Haymon.
Al has to see the long-term paper. Nah. And it's not that long-term.
He ain't going to see it six months later. Because this is how...
Then he's going to lose a cash cow.
But here's the thing. Like, Al Haymon is going to look at this and say, well, you know, this is Deontay's fight. If Deontay's not fighting, what's our biggest fight? Because that's his fighter. Now he's basically, PBC is now cut out. Fox is now cut out. This has now become a ESPN DAZN deal. Haymon's not going to be comfortable with that at all.
You can put in the contract and rework it to say, Fury, you can do this, but your next, there's no immediate rematch. Your next fight is with Wilder. If you win, done. Now, you can't control what goes on at Anthony Joshua's camp, but you can gamble on Fury beating Joshua and saying, no, you're not going to rematch him immediately. You have to fight this guy next. Done deal. And then if you want to keep all the money in-house and if you're worried about the bag, you put Andy Ruiz against Deontay Wilder next. And you keep all money in-house because you represent both, and Ruiz has a name. and you turned it into a four-man tournament type of format.
I'm telling you, with Fox,
you tell his ass to watch Andy Ruiz, which isn't easy.
With Fox looking at this as we're losing out, it's going to be really hard for them to sit, to watch the Saudi bag not come their way, and to watch their guy get cut out of this. Because if for some reason Tyson Fury loses and Anthony Joshua becomes the undisputed champion, now you got to deal with, like, it's not the relationship that you forged with Bob Arum. Now you have to deal with Eddie Hearn and DAZN. That's a different ball game. And who knows, like, you think Anthony Joshua, you think they're going to be like, yeah, 50-50. Hell no. They already got a deal for Wilder Fury. The money's already there. You got to negotiate all over again with Anthony Joshua.
Yeah.
They don't want to do that. They're not going to want to do that. Look, I get it. I think it's the right move for everybody. I think Wilder needs a tune-up fight. But, dude, they're not going to want to negotiate with Joshua if Joshua wins. They don't want to roll that dice. They want to take what they have right now and cash out. Whatever happens, happens, rather than being cut out and then being in a position where Joshua's just like, not even Joshua, but just, you know, Eddie Hearn and DAZN's like, nah, we're good. We're okay.
Yeah. You're rolling the dice on Tyson Fury winning.
Yeah. You don't, like,
and
something happens.
Now you're dependent on someone and how well you think Tyson Fury would do against Joshua.
Like, dude, if Joshua were to beat Tyson Fury, it messed.
Then your whole shit goes up in smoke.
So I don't think they want to run that risk. It's the right thing to do because, like, Wilder needs a tune-up fight. But the business of boxing, like it always has, will get in the way.
Yeah. Because that's the biggest problem, because what are you going to do? Like, they can literally play keep away with the belts if Joshua wins. Because he can fight Dillian White, then he can fight Usyk, then he can fight Dubois. Like, you never get another shot at being unified or undisputed world champion.
You know what Deontay Wilder turns into? Gennady Golovkin.
Ugh.
Because he can't fight the guy. Tough go. He can't fight the guy he's after.
Yeah.
It sucks, but it's politics of boxing.
Cold world. Nah, man, that's our show for today. So we went through multiple things, MMA, boxing, sexy-ass Jill Scott. So it was a really good show. Thank you guys for tuning in. Shout out to the sponsors. Shout out to Blue Chew. Shout out to the network Blue Wire. And also follow us on social media at @CornerPodcast_, at Kel Dansby, him at Andreas Hale. We'll be back on Thursday talking pro wrestling. We have tons to talk about on that front as well. We have a pay-per-view Money in the Bank coming up that we have to predict, and the weekly shows from this week. So hopefully you guys join us then. Until then, though, we're out.
Peace.